Welcome to Future of Freedom. I'm your host, Scott Bertram. Future of Freedom is a production of America's Talking Network. You can check out all of our great podcasts at americastalking.com. Joining me today is Eric Mattson. He is Deputy Director of the Adam Smith Program in the Department of Economics at George Mason University. You can find out more at adamsmithprogram.org. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Scott, for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast.
We start most of these conversations in a fairly similar way to allow you to tell us about what your organization does. So what is the mission of the Adam Smith Program and why does it exist?
Our program is located within the Department of Economics at George Mason University. And what we do is explore the some of the moral and political dimensions of economics through the lens of thinkers like Adam Smith, some of his contemporaries, for instance, David Hume, his friend, his teacher, Francis Hutcheson, and the natural law tradition leading into those thinkers. And so our goal really is to understand and to learn more about moral philosophy, political theory, by reading these great thinkers. We find that studying these thinkers in the context of an economics department opens the door to broader conversations about society, about the common good, and the place of the science of economics within those conversations.
So we should discuss the man, the philosophy of Adam Smith, as we set up the conversation about the Adam Smith Program. What should we know about Adam Smith and his philosophies?
For those of you who don't know, Smith was an 18th century Scotsman. He was born in 1723 and he died in 1790. Smith wrote published two books. The first was called The Theory of Moral Sentiments, and the second was called The Wealth of Nations. These two books together are kind of a joint broad program in moral philosophy, an effort to understand human nature, to understand ethics, and to understand how we can improve society. What are the political measures, the social measures that we can put in place to make the world, to make our societies better? And so I think the high point of Smith's philosophy, a high point at least, is what he calls in The Wealth of Nations the liberal plan, which he describes as allowing each person to pursue his or her interest. And that is an integral aspect of his thought. It pulls together bits of his moral philosophy, and it really reflects Smith's idea, which he develops in The Wealth of Nations, but also in his other book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, that freedom serves the common good of humankind. And he explores the economic and the social and the ethical dimensions of that claim throughout his works, I think. But in a nutshell, that's I think, the heart of Smith's program and the heart of the classical liberal tradition that I think he represents.
So how does that liberal plan, that freedom to pursue interests, our individual interests, how does that help to promote a kind of social order, according to Smith?
One way that Smith develops this claim is he begins with the knowledge that each person has, and he tells us that, well, each of us has knowledge of our circumstances, and we can pursue the good in our local spheres. As we move beyond our local spheres, our ability to pursue the good diminishes. It's quite difficult for us to further the good of strangers on the other side of the world in a concrete way. And so the liberal plan authorizes individuals to focus on their local spheres, to pursue commerce, for instance, to care for their friends and their family. In the right institutional context, many individual efforts to further the good of their individual spheres are coordinated through the rule of law and through the price system, for instance, into a much broader integrated social and economic order. And this is the point that he elaborates when he talks about the division of labor, for instance. the basic idea is that the liberal plan allows individuals to make use of the knowledge that they in fact have, and in doing so, they serve a broader purpose. They contribute to the division of labor, for instance, and they increase material standards of living. And really, the heart is that the liberal plan allows each person to make a becoming use of the things that are their own, to steward their resources and relationships. And that, I think, is really the heart of Smith's message.
I want to ask this early on because it is so so central to the core of Smith. A Smith economy liberal plan is driven by people making these decisions, people pursuing their own interests. But we know that people are flawed, and we know that people will make bad decisions all the time. So why should we trust people?
Yeah, that's of course a good point. And Smith, if you read The Theory of Moral Sentiments, the whole book is filled with insights on the limitations of human judgment, on our fallibility, on our tendency to pursue things that actually are not in our interests and our true interests. One remark is that the liberal plan in the institutions of freedom, basically we avoid systematizing human error. So another way of putting this is a large, sprawling government that interferes in individuals' activities potentially systematizes human error and human fallibility. Whereas under the liberal plan, people will make many mistakes, but those mistakes are localized. There are feedback mechanisms in place. So under the institutions of freedom, individuals tend to bear the consequences for their actions. So there's a tighter feedback mechanism between individual error and flawed judgment and on-the-ground realities. So that's one way. That's, I think, the way that the American founders thought about this, for instance.
Mm-hmm. What about the role of government at all in this Smith plan? To what extent, if any, did he think that government should regulate these markets? And would he look differently upon a smaller local government taking actions as opposed to a larger, more monolithic government taking actions like this?
Smith, of course, sees a role for government. Smith's philosophy, I should say, Smith is not a utopian thinker. He doesn't even prescribe. He prescribes certain duties that the government ought to fulfill. He doesn't have a model of what the ideal state should be. Smith's philosophy involves starting where we are and moving in the direction of more freedom. He's not out to construct an idealized version of the state. Smith does believe that the government ought to intervene in markets in certain instances. He does believe that the state ought to provide certain public goods. If you read The Wealth of Nations, many of these interventions that he prescribes are kind of local level interventions. And so I suppose you could say that he has a presumption for freedom that the government ought to not intervene. Mm-hmm. In cases when the government should intervene, he has a presumption of, I guess you could say, localism. So he prefers decentralized local interventions. I suppose it's a kind of, you might describe it in terms of federalism today. But that broadly fits with his ideas about knowledge and feedback mechanisms that I mentioned a few minutes ago.
Eric Mattson is with us. He is Deputy Director of the Adam Smith Program in the Department of Economics at George Mason University as we talk on the Future of Freedom podcast. Smith is known for the invisible hand. What does that mean? What function does it serve in the economy?
The invisible hand is, of course, a very famous idea. Smith only uses the phrase twice, actually, in his published writings. But I think it essentially captures the idea that our actions have unintended consequences. And under certain institutional conditions, those unintended consequences are quite beneficial and serve the good of humanity at large. So the classic way to think about this is just in terms of the division of labor, which is something I mentioned before. So as each of us pursues our own interest and tries to further the good of our local spheres within the rule of law and the rules of justice, so long as our actions are bounded in that way, as we trade with other people, as we pursue our interests, we actually increase the material well-being of millions and billions of strangers that we don't know. So in that instance, serving the good of the whole is not our intention, but it's a consequence of our actions. And so I think that's the essential idea of the invisible hand. And it's something that you see playing out in many different contexts throughout Smith's work.
As we discuss the work of the Adam Smith Program, which you can find more at adamsmithprogram.org, you in fact host these seminars called the Invisible Hand Seminars. What happens there? Who has presented at those occasions?
The Invisible Hand Seminar is in a way the centerpiece of our program. We bring in speakers. Sometimes graduate students will workshop their papers. Mostly we bring in speakers who are working in economics or in political theory or in law or in philosophy. And they deliver papers sometimes on Smith, sometimes on Scottish Enlightenment, sometimes on the liberal tradition generally. And we hear the paper, we have a discussion, and then we all go out for dinner and continue the conversation. So it's really kind of a focal point of the Smith Program community. We have a list of speakers on our website. Last spring, we had two graduate students workshop their papers, Jacob Hall and Sebastian Rodriguez. Sebastian is working on the liberal tradition in Colombia, so he talked to us about that. We had David Schaefer from College of the Holy Cross. He gave us a presentation on the French philosopher Montaigne. We had Craig Smith, a Smith scholar from Glasgow. And then we had Catherine Pakluk, who is at Catholic University, and she spoke to us about liberalism and Catholic social thought. So it's kind of a wide array of topics centering on the liberal tradition, with an emphasis, of course, on Smithian themes.
The Adam Smith Program also hosts these weekly reading groups. Who takes part in those reading groups? What are the books that are discussed during those times?
The reading groups are attended by students, mostly PhD students in economics at George Mason. We have some other faculty members at George Mason who participate from the law school, for instance, and other econ faculty. We of course read Smith's books regularly. There are our program, we offer two courses, and one of the courses is on the theory of moral sentiments, and one of the courses is on the wealth of nations. So we never read those books in the reading groups. Smith actually has some other materials that have been published since his death, his correspondence, his lectures on jurisprudence, his lectures on rhetoric. So we read those books regularly. We've also recently been interested in the role of Christianity in the rise of liberalism. So we've been reading books in that vein. We read a book by Larry Siedentop called Inventing the Individual a few semesters ago. This coming fall, we're reading Max Weber's Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism. So those are some of the themes we've been interested in recently.
What is the hardest concept, the hardest ideas for these students to understand or to grasp during the course of these reading groups?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's one specific idea that's difficult to grasp. I mean, one of the points of these reading groups is not so much to, of course, we want to teach students. We want students to learn. But we want students to read these books and wrestle through these ideas themselves. And so that kind of Socratic method leaves some things on the table, and a lot of the learning takes place as students sort of wrestle through the texts themselves. I think it's difficult for many people, and sometimes students have a hard time coming around to this, is the connections that we see in the liberal tradition between freedom and individual rights and the common good. These two things are sometimes juxtaposed, especially in contemporary political discourse, but we see them as, at least in Smith's thought and in Smith's tradition, as of a piece.
Economics, economies, and their function today can be thought of as being different than they were in Smith's time. Why are those governing principle, why are his ideas so relevant today, still so relevant today, when perhaps the idea behind the economy or the function of the economy is different than it was in his time?
The economy, it's different in some ways. It's similar in many other ways. But I think the main thing is that Smith's system, Smith's philosophy, is built around reflections on human nature, and that doesn't change over time. And so the principles that Smith develops, the sensibilities that he communicates, are in a sense universal and apply throughout history. And so the historical circumstances, the historical context change, and those changes sometimes require new sorts of policies, thinking about concrete issues in new ways. But by and large, the philosophy holds across time because it's rooted in reflections on what it means to be a human being, what knowledge we can hope to have, what we can hope to achieve through our politics.
Are there specific writers or thinkers who have taken Adam Smith's ideas and advanced them here in the past 100 years or so?
Smith scholarship over the last, I'd say, 30 years has blossomed. Smith's work, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, was more or less consigned to oblivion for 150 years after his death. That work has been recovered, and there's been a growing interest in integrating his works, integrating The Theory of Moral Sentiments with The Wealth of Nations. There's an old problem in Smith scholarship called the Adam Smith problem, which came out of 19th century German scholarship. And the idea was that these two books actually showcased different and conflicting views of human nature. And so there's been an interest in integrating these books. Also, you know, since the financial crisis in 2008, there's been a real soul searching in the discipline of economics. And so people have turned to Smith as a kind of moral authority on the ethical dimensions of economics. So there have been many, many books and hundreds of articles published in the last, 20 years on these themes.
In general, are free markets ascendant? Is Adam Smith's liberal plan being adopted, being considered in more and more places? Or does it have somewhat of a public relations problem these days?
I would say it has something of a public relations problem these days, from both ends of the political spectrum. On the right, for instance, many are questioning the role of free markets in promoting the common good, in promoting human prosperity. And on the left, there's always been some skepticism towards the market. And there's always, I think, been a misunderstanding of the heart of Smith's plan and this idea that I mentioned before, that freedom, in fact, serves the common good. There's a lack of appreciation for that truth. And I think proponents of the market sometimes do themselves a disservice by neglecting that truth and by emphasizing individual rights, for instance, and not discussing the truth that these rights and these rules and these freedoms find their moral authorization principally in the fact that they do serve the common good. They yield prosperity. I think there's a PR problem. Smith's plan has a PR problem, and I don't think it's ascendant, unfortunately, right now, at least in American politics.
So I'm certain it's a question you tackle at the Adam Smith program, which is how to reverse that PR problem. You are certainly reading, thinking, discussing these ideas. Is there a public policy aspect to what you do?
There's not a concrete public policy aspect. Our goal is to facilitate discourse in the spirit of Smith, to help promote these broad liberal sensibilities by reading these works, by having conversations with students through our reading groups, through our seminars. We host conferences semi-regularly with other institutions in the DC metro area. So we seek to build networks and to reach out to students. It's a kind of grassroots sort of philosophy in a way. Yeah, our goal isn't to promote specific policies, although we have opinions on specific policies, but that's not the focus of what we do. It's more a focus on cultivating these liberal sensibilities and an appreciation for the liberal plan and the spirit of Smith.
Eric Mattson is with us. He is Deputy Director of the Adam Smith Program in the Department of Economics at George Mason University. AdamSmithProgram.org for more. You're on the Future of Freedom podcast. You wrote back in 2020 an essay on the question of whether wealth increases our happiness and how to balance the pursuit of those two. Where does freedom come into the equation? Should we value freedom above wealth and above happiness?
I think the answer is yes. I'd have to think about it more carefully, but I do think freedom is more important than wealth, and it's a bit odd to juxtapose those things or put them or imagine instances where they are in conflict. Although I suppose freedom sometimes makes people wealthy, sometimes makes people poor. So freedom is more important than wealth.
As you look to the future, short term, long term, why? I mean, certainly in this country and in other countries, there is an increase in this dalliance or discussion about more socialist policies. Why will Adam Smith? Why will the liberal plan? Why will free markets continue to win in the future?
I'm not confident that they will continue to win, in the sense that, as we mentioned before, they don't seem to be ascendant in public opinion right now. Why would they continue to work in the future if they are adopted and promoted? This goes back again to our discussion a few minutes ago about human nature and how free markets, the operation of free markets, really rest on what we are as human beings, what we can know, what we can achieve. And that won't change, even though the economy takes on different forms, even though technology changes. The limitations of our knowledge are still in place. Our responsiveness to incentives are still in place, and that stays the same over time. And so free markets will continue to be the best means by which we can advance the good of the whole and increase material prosperity.
Eric Mattson, he is Deputy Director of the Adam Smith Program in the Department of Economics at George Mason University. You can find out more about their efforts at AdamSmithProgram.org. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be on. Appreciate it.
I'm Scott Bertram. For more episodes of Future of Freedom or for other fine podcasts from the America's Talking Network, go to americastalking.com or search wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you for listening to Future of Freedom, a production of America's Talking Network.